Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists. Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world.
You are listening to the Spiritual Activist Radio Show, and I am Rahasia Uncensored, where we look at the world not as it is, but as we know it can be, if and only if we have the courage to question the answers we've been given. This is our world, and it's time for us to take it back. Okay, today we're going to be talking with Michael Reynolds. He's called the Garbage Warrior, and he builds houses out of old tires and cans and a little bit of everything. But before we get into that, I'm suppose that most of you know that here in the Paradise, Magalia area, I live in Magalia, that we've gone through the worst and most devastating fire in the history of California. 14,000 personal homes, and that's not counting a few thousand business buildings. And I think the thing that we have to really start looking at here is, what is going on, really? Because a lot of people are asking me. They're saying, okay, this was caused by directed energy weapons. Okay, when I first heard that, I thought, okay, let's look into this. The more I look into it, the more truthful it actually looks like it is. I mean, how do you get rid of 14,000 homes so quickly and so completely? And the answer to that, I know this sounds strange, but I think as we put these pieces together, we have to ask some serious questions. Like Building 7, there's a really good documentary called Incontrovertible. It's made by the police and firemen, and it's specifically to other police and firemen to, hey, wake up. This building did not come down because of an office fire. It's ridiculous. It's childish. It's moronic to even think that that could even possibly be. But even when you look at the Twin Towers, think about this. Even if this was thermite, even if this was a controlled, they have these mini nuclear explosions that they say might have caused this. And there is some radioactivity there. But what is it that would cause a 100-plus story building that got hit with basically kerosene, you know, it's the jet fuel, and most of that burned out on the explosion? So what is it that would turn a building 100-plus stories in less than 10 or 12 seconds, turn it into a pile of dust? That's not what a fire does by any stretch of the imagination. And I think anybody with a little bit of IQ and a few brain cells firing still would come to the same conclusion. There's something more to this. Now, there's General Stupplebine. He has already openly said that there is absolutely no way that a plane struck the Pentagon. There's no way a plane with two 6,000-pound titanium Rolls-Royce engines would have just sort of vanished into the building without leaving major holes. Something went through that building and came out the other side pretty much intact. There's a round hole. It went through many, many, many feet of reinforced concrete and steel. A plane would not do that. It would bust all to pieces. I was listening to something the other day, and they've been interviewing some of the people that was involved in that. Their families were involved in that. And I think this lady, it was her daughter, and the powers that be brought her some of her daughter's personal things that was on the flight, and her passport and some other paperwork. And the mother said, well, where did you get this? And they said, well, it was on the seat next to her. I mean, where's the seat? They didn't find any seats. Flight 93, just a hole in the ground. First time, every single situation we could talk about that has to do with 9/11 is very, very mysterious. And any one of them would make anybody wonder. And I tell you, this fire in paradise is striking an old familiar chord with all of this. Because I don't know if you've gone to our website, but if you go to lotusguide.com/campfire, since I have a press pass, we were allowed to go in, and strangely enough, we were the only news show that was actually driving through the rubble and taking videos. All of the traditional news were just basically standing in front of a pile of rubble, doing their blah, 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 and getting into their vans and heading back down to the city. But if you go there, you can watch some of the videos I took. And it's really revealing, super revealing, because these homes were brought down to dust and so quickly. And I've talked to John Lord. He's a retired fire captain out in Lake County. He said there's like 1,000 degrees that's unaccounted for. And it's not natural, he said. Okay, if it's not natural, then what is it? It's something unnatural. If it's unnatural, I think we do need to get to the bottom of it. Right now, we've been over our heads here just dealing with helping people get in homes and places to park, places to be, food, water. It's 'cause the news cycle is over. And once the news cycle gets over, it's really hard to keep people engaged. There's few places around town that's doing this. But I'm afraid the hoopla is sort of dying down, and you know, people are getting a little tired of feeling bad and helping, as odd as that sounds to me and a lot of you. So what we're doing, in case you're interested, we're starting the Lotus Guide Center for Healing and Information. It's going to be in Paradise. And if you go to our website, and you can get all the information there. It's going to be at 6268 Skyway, right in the middle of where everything happened. And we're going to set it up to where we can have open mic, because we've lost that center, the Buffalo Norton Hall. We're going to set it up to where we can have roundtable discussions, think tanks. My wife, Dara, is going to do her weekly meditations there, which are meditations specifically for relieving stress and letting you take in a deep breath and just letting it go. Because there is a kind of meditation. It's sort of based upon a lot of bioenergetics and somatics, which is mixed in with this. And the best way to explain it is, think back to when you were a kid. What did you do when you got mad? Didn't want to go to school. You'd throw a temper tantrum. You would throw yourself on the floor and you would jump up and down going, "Oh, I don't want to go to school." You know, that is because our bodies know what to do with frustrated, stressful energy. It runs it out. So these meditations that my wife does is really, really good. And you can see more about that on her website, which is daralemos.com, DharaLemos.com. And she just did a voiceover for that. That's pretty cool because people like to be guided. And it's a good idea for this because there's a lot more to it than just finding a quiet corner, sitting down, crossing your legs, and go, because you see people doing this. Trust me, if you could get inside their head, it's not just, it is chaotic confusion, because all of that energy that's been pinned up, suppressed, and pushed down is coming out, and it's coming out the only way it can since you're not moving. It's coming out into your intellect, your emotions, your thoughts, and there you go. You're off and running, and you catch yourself, go, "Oh, I'm supposed to be quiet. I'm supposed to be meditating," and it's just this constant little interplay back and forth. There's ways to get around that. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to play this interview I did with Michael Reynolds of Earthship. And I think we really need to not only get out of the box and think out of the box, we need to start seeing that the box itself is an illusion. We need to go beyond this box. I remember Robert Kennedy said something once. It went something like, some people see the world as it is and say why. I see the world as it could be and say why not. And I think that's where we are. We need to see the world as it could be. And the thing we're running up to in Butte County and Paradise is building codes. There are some really efficient ways to build homes, and they're fireproof, they're safe, they're well insulated, they're strong, but they don't have the permit codes written to permit this. And all I can say to you people that give out permits, I would stand in front of those 14,000 homes and say, okay, you wrote the permits for these homes, right? Well, how did that work out? Isn't it time to start thinking a little differently? And I think if we all get together on this and push, because people give up too easy. I was at a meeting last night in Chico, and people are already giving up because the building codes don't allow for this and that. I'm going to read a couple things. This is, for those of you watching on YouTube, this is the new issue of Lotus Guide. And as you can see, it has the Phoenix bird on the front. And it's talking about let's rebuild. And you can also read this magazine online at lotusguide.com. It's a flip magazine online. But here's something that, and I know a lot of you have heard this ad nauseum, but it really does us good to really think about this. People have given their lives to try to warn us. And we just ignored them, turned on Dancing with the Stars, whatever it is we watched, the Kardashians, and with our apathetic selves, went back to our little couch. But I tell you, all of this is knocking on our door, especially around here. This is something that Eisenhower said, and believe me, he cashed in every single political chip he had to make this speech. It says, now this, in conjunction with an immense military establishment and a large arms industry, is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved, and so is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or our democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together. Because I tell you, if we start giving up our security for liberty, it's true, we don't deserve either one of them. And that is something that I included into this issue, and also included something that President Kennedy said, and played dearly for it too. He says, and by the way, he was assassinated a couple of weeks later. The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we are as a people inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, the secret oaths, and to the secret proceedings. Then he goes on to say, For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. And you know, when I hear these words, it instills in me a moral obligation. I personally, this is my own idea about this, and it's not just mine. I think we lost our government the moment that bullet went into John F. Kennedy's head. That was a coup that was pulled off so well, so quick, so seamless that we didn't even notice until years later. But come to find out, it wasn't seamless and it wasn't perfect. And everybody is pulling on these loose strands and loose ends, and it's unraveling. And when you compare the assassination of Kennedy, which most people know that it wasn't some guy in a library that was some fantastic shot that shot him from the rear and the bullet went into the front of his head. The Twin Towers, I mean, they've gone way too far with Building 7. I mean, they pushed it. Now around all these fires in Northern California, and then when you add up all of the information around it, including the information that it's one of the people from Rothschild, the House of Rothschild, that has been responsible for almost every war in the past 150 years by financing both sides. He sits as CEO with PG&E, and I'm sure that the Rothschilds owns PG&E. They probably own quite a bit of energy. They've been doing the energy grab since they found out about fossil fuels. They want to control people, and the one way to control them is to control their energy, their communication, and their money. And if you control that, you can control where they live, what they think. They have the media. The media is basically owned by private corporations that are ruled by these families. So what happens when all this starts coming out and people start waking up? Well, I think everything starts to change. Like the very word apocalypse, the original meaning means a lifting or a thinning of the veils between realities. And personally, I don't think we're going to make it unless. And this is why I have the spiritual activist program. I do believe we need to stay active, but I do know that without spiritual consciousness, I don't think we have it in us to make it. You know, Einstein said, we're never going to come up with the solutions from the same level that created the problems. We have to evolve. It's do or die. Everything's on the line. My friend Dane that has the geoengineeringwatch.org website, I suggest you go there and watch some of the things that's happening in our environment. The 5G, I'm going to be interviewing Deborah Tavares, because she's really into this thing with the 5G and the EMF waves, and this is all really looking like we're being attacked. And I'm not a fearmonger. I'm probably the most easygoing, kickback, laid-back person, and even though it's slightly unwarranted at this point, I am a very positive person about the future of human beings, but only if we wake up to what's really going on. And I'm going to be looking into this, because I'm not a person that throws out a bunch of stuff on the World Wide Web just to get a bunch of hits and as clickbait on YouTube or anything. I really don't care. I don't even monetize my stuff. But after I really start searching and doing the research and looking into this, you're going to hear me talk more and more and more about it as the facts mount up, because we need to pay attention. We need to all come together, because if we don't, these people are going to win. They always have won in the past. And we can't let that happen to us. So once again, if you can visit our website at lotusguide.com, and my radio show is bbsradio.com/spiritualactivist. And by the way, they got completely burned out with this fire, but they're back up and running right now. They're really doing well under these situations, and they've had a lot of support from the community. So I'm really thankful for that, because without that, I wouldn't have my radio show, for one. But without that, it would be really discouraging for a lot of people. Doug and Donald are brothers, and they've done a tremendous job, and they're not the kind of people that give up easy, like somebody else I know. So I think we're going to get into the interview here in a couple of minutes. And once again, if you visit www.lotusguide.com/campfire, you'll notice that we have a couple of ways to donate there if you feel like donating, because all the money that's donated is going directly to either our advertisers or to opening up the center, which is going to be for information, healing, and distribution of everything from bottled drinking water on. And we could use your help, because my wife and I, we're doing this with our own money right now, and it's running low because we've been impacted pretty heavily by the fire. But we're just the kind of people that we just keep on doing till we can't do anymore. But I don't think that moment's going to come up, because I have confidence in Butte County coming up with some grants and people donating to our GoFundMe site. And again, that's at the /campfire off the Lotus Guide website. And let's see here. What else could I tell you? If you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at info@lotusguide.com. And I think that's about it. There's a lot of things I could talk about, but I want to get going with this interview, and I'll talk to you after the interview. Thank you for listening to BBS Radio, Spiritual Activist Show. And once again, thank you very much for your time. And I really try to make each show worth your while to listen to. So thank you very much. Now let's listen to Michael Reynolds. So I'd like to start this out, Michael, with something that I heard from a really good friend of mine, Bruce Lipton. He's a microbiologist. And sort of set the tone for this interview. He once told me, he says, remember the story about the caterpillar becoming a butterfly? And I said, yeah. He says, well, something that a lot of people don't really recognize is the fact that there's that part in the middle, because the caterpillar ends up eating hundreds of times its weight in food and almost destroys its environment. But for some unknown reason, it finds some place to hang upside down and spins its cocoon and completely starts breaking down. And in the midst of that chaos, if you would open up that cocoon, it looks like a bunch of, well, let's just call it garbage. Looks like a bunch of chaotic garbage. But inside all of those cells that look really chaotic are something called imaginative cells. And he says that the amazing thing about the imaginative cells is they somehow pick up on a visionary experience of what has to be. And they use all of the chaotic cells that look like they're nothing but garbage from the old caterpillar days and reformulate that into a new pattern of a butterfly. And I think in today's world, that's what we call our visionaries, people that are able to use the old worn out garbage of our past, all of our, call it mistakes for lack of better words, but they're able to use that and see beyond the chaos, see beyond the conflict, see beyond all of the negativity, and go, okay, it's time to take a deep breath, tuned into what is really necessary and start visualizing a new future and use what we have here at our disposal. And this reminds me of you. You know, you're like a, I don't know, when my wife and I first watched The Garbage Warrior, we were obviously impressed. You know, it's a very impressive thing you're doing. But when we bought all of your manuals, and when we read your vision, and we just thought, you know what, this is really, really important in today's world. No matter if they use your system or straw bale houses or whatever, we have to start living not just sustainable. We have to really bring it down a notch and let the earth really revitalize itself. So that's really why we wanted to talk to you today, because we honestly believe in what you're doing. And we have friends in Brazil that really want to hear you when you go to Rio. They own thousands of acres outside of Brasilia. And we're all totally into what you're trying to do, Michael. So I really appreciate your time and the possibility of helping you spread the word.
Okay, thanks.
You are one of the imaginative cells. I bet of all the things, when you were 20 years old, if somebody told you, someday you're going to be called the garbage warrior and an imaginative cell, you'd have probably just laughed at them.
Probably.
So where are we at today, Michael, with everything that you're doing?
Well, it's sort of, I'd have to say it's a crescendo situation. We've started an academy, and it's turning out to be beyond our wildest dreams, because when you get young, not always young, but just eager to evolve people together in one place, wanting to learn from our past decades of mistakes, but also wanting the same thing, wanting a better world, the academy has attracted a bunch of people like that, and that's fueling us. We're fueling them. We're doing projects all over the world, plus the academy. Now the academy is getting integrated into that. And it's all just, it's a lot. And we're just trying to, you know, it's almost like having a tiger by the tail. We're trying to keep up with what's going on. And it's definitely taking up every ounce of energy and time, but it's giving us energy at the same time. So it's an amazing time for this idea, because it is needed at this point, and we have been doing it for so long, we're pretty good at it. But we're constantly learning. Like part of what you were saying made me think of one of the things that we have really learned in the last few years, is that part of the whole thing is in us, and having, you know, we're coming up with all kinds of ways to use garbage and make energy and harvest water and contain and treat sewage and grow food. Yeah, we're doing all of those things because those systems in the real world here are all flailing right now. But another thing that I would have to point out to everyone I get a chance to talk to is, part of the battle is in our own minds and hearts. We have to need less. We have to realize that it can be much more simple to stay alive on this planet, because there are so many people and there are dwindling resources and there are so many things that are out of control. A more simple life is the first step for everyone.
Yeah, I like what you said once. You said, live simply so others can simply live.
Yeah, I didn't say that. An economist, E.F. Shoemaker, said that.
Yeah, well, it's a good one to lay on you, because that's exactly what this is about.
And when you're trying to make your own power and harvest your own water and grow your own food and contain and treat your own sewage and heat and cool yourself in your own shelter, when you're trying to do those things, it's a hell of a lot easier to do those things when it's a small amount of power that you need. And you know, if you're making your own power, all of a sudden you're going to go, well, I don't know that I need to leave these lights on all night long, or I don't need that, know that I need to do this. So there are a lot of tricks. You know, I don't know that I need to water my lawn all night long if I'm harvesting my own water. When you put yourself in charge of your utilities, then it does cause you to go, you know, question what your uses are. And, you know, when you start doing that, then you start making room for other people to stay alive on this planet, and plants and animals. You start making room for others.
Yeah, my wife is from Brazil, Dara. And one of the first things she noticed when she came up here was, she said, this is crazy. Everybody has green lawns out in front. Why doesn't everybody grow food? You know? Yeah. And being an American and indoctrinated into the climatology of being an American, I never even thought about it. But the more I thought about it, it's actually changed our lives. We have a garden out back. We have a whole solar bank of solar panels. We have two wind turbines. But it feeds back into the system and just sort of equalizes our electric bill. But, you know, it's a start. You know, it's a start. Because we really think, now here's where we have to get a little bit real. I mean, I think maybe you have more faith in people than I do. I'm not sure. But the good thing about your system is, as an individual, it can be really great. Collectively, it could save lives and mankind. But I'm not too sure if people will do this until it's too late. Because people are so comfortable, especially in the United States. And I think this is something you're going to notice when you go to Brazil. People in other countries are more open to this. One word when you go to Brazil, favela. We had an idea in Brazil when we first watched The Garbage Warrior to get in touch with the powers that be in Rio and start a movement. Because you could start at the favela at one level and just start working your way down and using all of their bricks and stones and mud and just revitalize that whole area. But that would be a quite a job to tackle. But here in the United States, I don't know. I think people are going to stay on this boat until the bow sinks. But it's really good to get the word out for the people that really want to take advantage of this. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm pretty sure you can go either way. You can say that the world is not going to make it, but we're just going to make a few people as comfortable as possible on the way down, you know. You can say that we may make it in time. But the thing is, that's the future. Now is obvious. We need to start making today and tomorrow a little better for the next day after that. I mean, I'm not really looking too far down the line. I'm looking at what I have to do right now. And what I have to do right now is a lot. And I'm trying to make, we know quite a bit about how we can make ourselves survive. And we're seeing that it's valuable enough that we want it. We want to share it as much as possible. You know, when the whole process is of like going to Haiti after the earthquake and trying to take what we know and make it work for them. You know, so you'd say that's a nice thing to do and help those people and whatever. The truth is, we came back, we learned more than we taught. We learned how simple it could be to live, and how the quality of life can be a lot better by living simply. And I mean, we came back educated from really trying to educate them. And so you just never know what you're going to get into. And there's no need to predict the future or be worried about the future. Let's make right now as good as we can. And that's kind of what we're doing.
Yeah, because I'm 64 now, and I think you've probably learned also that looking back in my life, almost everything I've ever worried about never happened. Yeah, so yeah. It as you get older, you realize that, and you live more in the moment, because we can't really tell what's going to happen in the future. But I know what you mean about other countries. We just got back from Brazil, and there's so many people living really, really simply. And again, that's what I like about your system, because what most people see as a problem, garbage, you see as a solution. And I think you can transpose that over onto so many things in our civilization today, not only in just building a house, but building a future. So much of what we have, we see as a problem, and it's actually a solution if you can find it.
Yeah, it's all a puzzle. And, you know, when there is a problem, you maneuver around it until it looks like a solution. I mean, every problem is a solution, and every solution can be a problem. It's like it all has to do with your ability to maneuver, mentally or spiritually or emotionally or physically, but just maneuvering your thinking and your belief system. And that's what made garbage be, you know, gold for us, because we started seeing garbage as, you know, I see a giant tire pile and I see a city. I mean, garbage to me, what people call garbage, I don't even have a definition in my mind anymore for garbage. Because I see it as resource.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think the more we go along too, that the more we're going to have to realize that. Every once in a while I go to the dump and I just seeing it fill up. And we live in a small community, and I'm seeing that dump fill up. It's amazing that we live in such a world where the systems are so centralized, and not only were we dependent on a centralized system, but we're dependent on a monetary system that is also very fragile and right at the verge of being dysfunctional. So I think living sustainably and living independent off the grid, or at least the ability to do so, is becoming more important for me, myself, personally. I know we have plans to buy a little piece of land down in Brazil and have that as a partial retirement place, but also a place to go to in case things ever really do break down.
Well, they're in the process of breaking down, but the thing is, it's all about, you know, what do you need now? You need water, you know, you need food, you need shelter, you need a certain amount of energy, and it's doable. It's doable right now, and the more you learn, I mean, I can't say it enough, the more simply you learn how to live, the easier it is. I mean, a good example is, you know, if you hike in the Himalayas, you only take a heavy pack once, and you are so miserable from taking that heavy pack that the next time you only take the bare necessities and very small amounts of that, and then you have a much more enjoyable time. So we have taken a heavy pack out into the world as a species or whatever, and now we're learning that taking a lighter pack and we have a better life. And there's the wealthy people have something to learn from the super poor, and the super poor have something to learn from the wealthy. The main thing is that we all learn from each other. And, you know, one thing we're looking at now is every person, not just the 17% that can in the developed world that can afford mortgages and trying to find a housing solution for them. 83% of the people in the world don't even know what a mortgage is. So we're looking for a method of living on this planet that involves 100% of the people on the planet. And we're learning that how to do that by traveling the planet. And it's getting pretty, you know, it's getting pretty amazing what we're finding and what we're putting together. And what I'm saying is we're constantly learning.
Yeah, I just this gets into financial enslavement too when you get into mortgages and all of that, and again this gets into stress-free living. But you know, I was just reading today in Bolivia they gave nature the status of like a human being. It has rights, and I think that's the beginning of a movement, at least in South America, to give nature rights. I mean, I almost feel a little strange even talking about stuff like this because it seems like a no-brainer that the very thing that sustains your life should be protected. But we live in such an artificial world with all of our meat sanitarily wrapped. We never see what goes on behind the scenes. Everything's in cans and boxes. And I think it's going to get really real for a lot of people when these systems start breaking down.
Yeah, it is. It's and you know, you can see that's going to happen and is happening. So, you know, that it's looking at, you know, I said in a book 25 years ago, there's clouds on the horizon. You know, take shelter.
Yep. Yeah, I like your view from the stars too, by the way.
Yeah,
that's a good way to look at it because it sort of releases you from the biasness of not only being a human, but being a earth being and seeing this planet from an alien perspective, which personally I think might be being done right now, actually. But be able to see this planet from an objective point of view, it really does look like human beings are more like a virus or a bacteria on the planet. But we can turn this around if we reevaluate how we live our lives.
Yeah, it is. And that's kind of what we're seeing. You know, we started out decades ago trying to make a better way to live the way people are living. And we made some headway. But what's important to us now is change the way we're living. And then all the things we have done to make to do that in a different way become very easy. So that's kind of where we're at now, is seeing that the two thoughts have to come together. The one thought of doing things in a more sustainable way, and the other thought of needing less in your whole life program, so that what you do for yourself is much less of a task.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I wrote a book a while back called To Believe or Not to Believe, and it's about all of the ways that we believe. It ends up filtering out so much crucial information. And when you start looking at the fact that most of our beliefs are based on Iron Age beliefs, and the fact that we have grown up into this system, there's so many people, they don't get what we're talking about right now. What would you say to that person to wake them up? If you could get them and mentally and emotionally shake them by the collar with your words, what would you say? Because our magazine is starting to reach traditional people now, not because our magazine has changed or altered its view, but because traditional systems are breaking down and people are looking for alternative ways to live life and take care of their health and so on and so forth. What would you say to that traditional person to wake them up a little bit?
Well, I think the only real wake-up call is when they reach for the milk and it's not there, you know, or they reach for the power and it's not there. And, you know, you can't warn them enough, but it's if you can bring something to them right now that impresses them, and that's kind of what we're trying to do. We're trying to travel in the developed world as well as the undeveloped world, and bring situations about that show people they do not need the centralized situation and the economy. The decentralized approach is really the shot. And I mean, it's not like I don't really try to convince people I just put it out there and do it and live it. And then if people see the value in that, they do. And if they don't, they don't. It's not that I really want to stand on a soapbox and preach to people and tell them how they should live and shake them by the collar and change them. I want to quietly demonstrate something, and if it's right, they will follow it. It's like, I look at it more like the Pied Piper. You know, I'm playing a tune, and the people that feel are moved by that tune, they're going to follow that tune. And if it's the right tune, millions will follow. If it's the wrong tune, nobody will follow. And it's up to me to find the tune that is worthy of being followed. And we are trying to find that. And so what I'm saying is I don't want to convince people. I want to have something that is so right on that they don't need convincing.
Right. Yeah, I think with the information you're talking about, your sincerity, and the fact the internet has been a game changer, you know, that has changed everything, getting information out to so many people. All of this considered, and I think people are finally starting to recognize that the big changes in life all throughout history have never come from the emperor, the king, or the president, or the people at the top. Every great positive moment in history has always come from one individual at a grassroots level that started a movement where there was a need for that movement. And I think we can see that now with our government. Our government is dysfunctional, and the people at the top, they're not going to initiate change. It's up to people like us at the grassroots level, using the power of the internet, to really spread the word.
Right.
You know, it's completely up to us. I think that is the biggest thing we have to come to grips with, to bring back our power as individuals and realize, I can do this. This is my life, and it's passing before me. I can do this, and get off the idea that the government is going to do it for us, or some organization, or anything. It is up to us as individuals.
I agree.
So you were raised in Kentucky, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I lived in Louisville for a while, actually in LaGrange,
yeah.
Nashville, Tennessee, born in West Virginia. So we're out here in the West now, Michael.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, listen, I'm going to let you get back to your life because I know you're busy.
Okay.
I'm going to really do the best I can with this, transcribe it, and I'll be sending you some magazines once we get it published.
Sounds good. Okay.
Okay, Michael, you have a great time in Canada, and I think we'll be in touch again because my wife and I, we want to come down there, do a seminar, and get some hands-on at some point.
Sounds good. Nice to talk to you.
Yep, same here, Michael. You take care.
Well, that was Michael Reynolds, and as you can see, if you're looking at this on YouTube, he's quite a character, and comes through with his voice, too. But it takes characters in this world to do what has to be done. Because if we keep on doing things the same old way with the same old people and expecting different results, I think that truly is insanity. And with people like Michael Reynolds, and we're going to be doing another interview with this guy too. He's going to be coming here to the Paradise area and actually building a little place on some friends of ours' property. And again, if you want to get in touch with me and need any of this information, we have 9,000 people on our email list, and you could easily be one of them. But email me at info@lotusguide.com. And I think I'm finding myself in a position at this point in my life where I'm starting to feel a responsibility to step out there into some pretty fragile areas as far as being a public person, because you have to put yourself out there and be prepared for it, especially when you start talking about things that has to do with the government. And I'll tell you something, I've never actually told anybody this in public. I've told a few friends this. Things have changed now. About 6 or 7 years ago, I was going to write an article on the reptilian connection with our government. And this guy I know, that I don't know how to explain this guy, except he does have connections with extraterrestrials, I believe. Neil Freer has connected me with him. Neil Freer is an old-time investigator. But I told this person that I was going to do this, and he says, nope, don't do it. He says, I know people that's made this connection with the government and reptilians, and it was a serious mistake. Your whole life will be turned upside down. But like I say, that's been 6 or 7 years ago. Things have changed now. People starting to talk. There are some strange things going on with the Antarctic. I don't want to bore you with all the little things that are going on, but for some of you that don't know about this, check it out. Do your research. A lot of times I put something up online on a YouTube or on my Facebook, and people say, well, tell us the results. Tell us what you found out. And I say, no. Here's the place where you go do your due diligence and find out for yourself. You know, and I did this in the last issue of Lotus Guide, too. I gave people a reading list. You know, go out there and read. You know, it's like not rocket science to find out what's going on anymore. People are writing about it all over the place. And I'll give you the same thing. There's some good websites. Stopthecrime.net, that's with Deborah Tavares. Geoengineeringwatch.org, that's with Dane Wigington. He's done so much. He's done the most as far as making people aware of what they're doing to our environment. And this has something to do with our fires, too, because the aluminum oxide could explain the temperature rise that nobody can quite explain. And we have ChicoSkyWatch.org here in Chico. That is also a good website. They have weekly meetings. And if you're caught in the California wildfire and you want some help from a law firm, you can go to cawildfireattorney.com. This is the attorneys that Robert Kennedy Jr. is representing. And again, you can go to my website, lotusguide.com/campfire, and you can actually see the damage that was done. And if you feel inclined to donate some money, there's two links there that you can do so. And if it needs to be to a nonprofit, my radio show is a nonprofit. So, and here's some books to read. And I highly suggest, if you haven't read these books, go out and get them and read. Get caught up with what's been going on. There's Ruled by Secrecy by Jim Mars, excellent researcher. The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy by Jim Mars. He recently passed away. The Creature from Jekyll Island, A Second Look at the Federal Reserve by G. Edward Griffin. Excellent book. You think the Federal Reserve is really complicated? It's only because they want you to think that. It's really pretty easy. It's a Ponzi scheme. Just read that book and you'll see. The Secret History of the World by Mark Booth. I have read that book and I've listened to it 3 times now. It's amazing. I remember having dinner with David Icke a few years ago. My wife and I were sitting there at the dinner table, and I asked him, so David, what should I remember when I'm trying to figure out what's going on in the world? He says, always, always remember this. Nothing, absolutely nothing is what it appears to be. And when he first said that, I thought he was just being David Icke, you know. But I tell you, when I started doing the research of everything I've been told by preachers and priests and parents and teachers and professors and well-meaning adults, none of it's been true. It's all been a lie, misleading at best. Another good book is, and this is a good one too, it'll lay out the Federal Reserve perfectly. You Know Something's Wrong When, and it's by Anna Ressinger and Paul Snover. Anna is a judge, and she knows what she's talking about. And another good one is Antarctica's Hidden History by Michael Sala. Another good one is Family of Secrets, The Bush Dynasty by Russ Baker. And a really good old-time, it's become a cult classic, is None Dare Call It Conspiracy by Gary Allen. And Behold a Pale Horse by William Cooper. Another good one, more recent, is UFOs. Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. That's by Leslie Keene. And, you know, William Cooper wrote the Behold a Pale Horse. He was an insider, and he told everybody, they're probably going to assassinate me. And sure enough, he was in his driveway one evening, and a couple of sheriffs said he pulled out a gun, and they shot him. But there was no gun found. So that's enough about that, I guess. And I hope you enjoy these shows that I'm putting up, because to tell you the truth, there's a part of me that would just soon disappear back into the woodwork and just let things be, because sometimes I feel like there's not much effect from individuals and myself, but the accumulation of everybody speaking out is starting to make a difference. People are starting to wake up. And the best analogy I can give you to this, and I'll leave you with this thought, and really think about this, because I think it's a good analogy. Think back to when you're having a dream at night. You're having this dream, and you've worked the dream out. Your dream life is yours. You've got it under control. You can fly with the best of them. Everything makes sense. Purple pigs can fly. It doesn't matter what you think about it. It is total reality, and it's your reality. And all the people in the dream seem to make sense because they're an aspect of your own personality usually. And everything makes sense until one thing starts to happen. That one thing is when you start to wake up. When you start to wake up and little things start not making sense. You know, purple pigs don't fly. You're thinking about this. Wait a minute. And then that starts waking you up even more. Then you start thinking about things like, wait a minute, talk show hosts aren't president. You know, that wakes you up a little bit more. Wait a minute, buildings don't fall all by themselves in free fall. All of these things are waking us up on a collective level. And likewise, in the morning when you wake up totally to this new level of consciousness, the dream dissipates. It fades away. It fragments. It collapses. It just falls apart. And I think if you look around at our world today, that's what's happening collectively. We're waking up as a collective consciousness. And as we wake up, the dream, the American dream, the global dream, you had to be asleep to believe it in the first place, but it's starting to not make sense. And as we wake up, we're going to wake up to a new reality with new responsibilities, but new energies and new power and new ways to manifest a new world, a sacred, sacred world that's emerging right before our very eyes. So that's the end of our show today, and I hope you enjoyed the interview with Michael. And you can look him up on the internet. Look up some of his things. Just go to Google and put in Earthships and look at some of the things he's doing. That's what I'm trying to get people here to start thinking about, because if we could actually literally live in a piece of art, it would change people's minds as far as the way we're supposed to live. We're not supposed to live in a little box. You know, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see I live in a log cabin, which is sort of cool. But there's even better ways to live. So we'll see you in a couple of weeks. And thank you for tuning in to Spiritual Activist Radio. And have a good life, because it's the only one we have that we know of.